In this episode of Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska.
All the wood could stay behind, but that candelabra was going to the cabin.
Burr LaMaire and her friends make a questionable packing decision while heading out into the backwoods of Alaska. Patty Burchell discovers that moose look really tall from below.
Have you ever seen a moose from the knee down, this far from your face? I could have reached out and tripped her.
And Ken Hughes gets into a very sticky situation on a boat with his wife and little kids that makes him question how he's doing as a father.
The wind's going the wrong way. He's never going to hear me. All I can do, and he's under the tarp, so he's not going to see me. All I can do is wonder what kind of damage I'm doing to my kids at this point.
Live from Nome, Alaska, up next on Dark Winter Nights, I'm Rob Prince. In October of 2024, I had the incredible pleasure of going to Nome, Alaska to organize and host a storytelling event with the Nome Arts Council called Tales Around the Wood Stove. What an incredible pleasure it was to get to spend time in that amazing village and meet the wonderful people there. It really was a life-changing experience. On top of that, did you know that wild musk oxen graze around town there? I'd never seen musk ox in the wild before. In fact, Nome is the first place in my life where I've ever worried about hitting a musk ox while driving. In today's episode of Dark Winter Nights, I want to bring you three wonderful stories from that magical night of storytelling we had in Nome. First up is Burr LaMaire, with a story about a backwoods ski trip in which they made, safe to say, the oddest and most impractical packing decision I've ever heard of in my life. Here's Burr.
My story takes place in March of 2017 in Wrangell St. Elias National Park. When most people think of March, they think of springtime. But in Alaska, springtime is still very much winter weather. My partner Tim and my friends Nick and Jenny were living in Anchorage. We were new to the state of Alaska, having just moved up in the summer of 2016. We had just survived our first Alaska winter, and we were ready for spring break. So we decided to celebrate by doing a backpacking ski trip in Wrangell St. Elias National Park. No big deal. It's springtime. We can drive to the trailhead. It's only 4 miles to the cabin, and we were told there would be a well-marked trail. So we packed up our belongings, we gathered them all up, including a cast iron skillet, a giant bottle of whiskey, and a brass candelabra. All very heavy items. And all things I imagined a good Alaskan would never be caught dead in the backcountry without. But don't worry, because did I mention that we were going to be pulling our belongings in on a pulk? Or in our case, a very small child's plastic sled? Not only were we new to Alaska, but we were also new to cross-country skiing and had never skied with gear before. Additionally, I was skiing on an injured foot and would later find out that I had a stress fracture. I was waiting until after this trip and the Usyk ski race to go see the doctor because, while I didn't know a lot about skiing, as the wife of a first-year medical resident, I knew that that doctor was going to tell me to stay home and take it easy. We get to the trailhead later than I would have liked, and it's cold in the negatives. Ignoring the advice of our friends who were born and raised in Alaska to never wear cotton when you're exercising outdoors, I was wearing Carhartt overalls, a lightweight rain jacket, a cotton beanie with a cute little ball on top. Not very practical for Alaska winter weather, or spring weather for that matter of fact, but I looked cute and very Alaskan. At least I thought I did. We get the sled together, we get out of the car, we put our belongings in the sled, we fill it up with food, water, wood, the cast iron skillet, this giant bottle of whiskey. I attach the candelabra to my backpack, we strap into our skis, and we are off. We quickly realize that skiing cross-country in backcountry Alaska is very challenging because I don't actually think there's any groomed trails anywhere for cross-country skiing in backcountry Alaska, and we had only skied groomed trails before. Additionally, for reasons I can't remember, Nick and Tim had decided to actually hike in, so Jenny and I are skiing, they're walking. We realized really quickly that this is just hard. And not only is it hard on skis, but it's also hard walking. Nick and Tim would take a step on solid ground, and then the next step, up to their knees. Take another step on solid ground, next step, up to their thighs. We were quickly learning about post-holing. About an hour into this trip, the plastic sled fell completely apart. And so, once again, feeling very Alaskan, we cached, a word I had never heard until we moved up here, half of the food, most of the water, and all of the firewood. Jenny and I took our skis off, and we left those behind too. At no point in the discussion of what to bring and what to leave behind did it ever come up that we would leave the candelabra with the broken sled. In my mind, for sure, and probably theirs too. All the wood could stay behind, but that candelabra was going to the cabin. So we keep going, and another hour in, and we can't find the trail at all. We don't see any trail anymore. And it's getting really hard. We are walking on frozen ice, like a river, more than snow, and we're falling definitely more than we're walking. But we are determined to find this cabin. It's spring break. So we go another hour. Still no sign of the trail. Definitely no sign of the cabin. It's getting dark, and the temperature's starting to drop. Tim, the ultramarathon runner of the group, agrees to run on ahead and yell back if he finds the cabin. This trip's actually been really fun so far. But as Tim takes off running, I realize I'm getting cold and tired, and I'm shivering, and I'm thirsty. So we only have a little bit of melted water left between us, and I go to take a drink out of Nick's water bottle. And with the beginning stages of hypothermia setting in, I start dry heaving into the water bottle. Nick and Jenny yell, "Burr! Don't you dare throw up into that water bottle. Don't you dare. That's all the water we have left." I got my vomiting under control and waited to hear the voice of Tim. I'm starting to realize that we may actually be lost in the Alaska wilderness in negative temperatures. We're bruised from falling. My foot is throbbing, and now I can't stop shivering at all. The thought of having to find the skis and our stuff and the car in the dark, in the cold, makes me feel exhausted and scared. Just as we were deciding if we should go look for Tim or start a fire, we heard a voice. "I found it! I found the cabin!" We walked towards Tim's voice. When we got there, we saw that he was cutting up logs that he had found under the cabin for firewood. Because remember, we didn't bring any firewood. We left it behind. We got the cabin warm. We had a hot meal using that cast iron skillet, a cup of whiskey, and that candelabra gave the best ambience you can ever imagine in a dry cabin. So the next morning, Nick and Tim and I decide that we're going to leave the cabin and go back down the trail to see if we can find the stuff that we cached. And we start, you know, our trip, and Tim and I are instantly just like sliding and falling again on that ice. And I look over to the right of me, and I see Nick just walking along nicely, not sliding, on firm snow. And I say, "Nick, did you find the trail? Are you on this trail?" And he looks around and he says, "Yeah, yes, I am." We took that trail back to our stuff, had another lovely night in the cabin with the best outhouse view I have ever seen. Tim, Nick, Jenny, and I all live in Nome now, where I have a sled dog team. I often get asked, why did I get into mushing? And I never really feel like I have a good answer. But looking back on this experience, I really think I've just been looking for a better way to take that cast iron skillet, bottle of whiskey, and candelabra into the Alaska winter wilderness. Thank you.
Burr LaMare. She shared that story at the October 2024 Tales Around the Wood Stove live event in Nome, Alaska. This is Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, the Live from Nome episode. I'm Rob Prince. If you'd like to see Dark Winter Nights live and in person, we're returning to the stage on March 1st, 2025. Tickets for our last four live events have all sold out before doors even opened. So I recommend signing up for our e-newsletter so you can be the first to know when tickets go on sale. The form to do that is on our website, darkwinternights.com. Up next from our storytelling show in Nome comes a story about conquering your fears before they literally trample you. Here's Patty Burchell.
I walk my dog all the time down the trail between the cemetery and Dry Creek, you know, the one that goes down toward the AC store. And my dog Jasper, you may have seen him around town. We walk all the time. He is very energetic. He needs his one or two walks a day in order to make my life easier in the evenings. He looks like a tall, thin chocolate lab. He is a gnome dog, so he's a little bit of everything. He loves to play. He is a 65-pound lap puppy. One of the things he loves to do this time of year especially, and until the snow melts, even when there's just a bit of a crust of snow on the ground, he drops his shoulder and slides and slides and slides. He bounces. He's energetic. He rarely barks unless something or someone walks past the window in the house. And then he lets you know that something is there, loudly. He also howls. Every time I come home from work for lunch or after work, he has to tell me about his day. And he will not let me take him outside until he has howled himself out. So this June lovely afternoon, about 4 years ago, we were walking that trail, as we often do, and there they were, unmistakably. Moose tracks. I'd never seen a moose that close to town. I know others have. I've heard stories of them going through Dry Creek, but I had never seen a moose that close to town. And yet, there they were, unmistakable, in the drying mud, moose tracks. Large one and a small one. And I thought, well, this is really cool. I'm going to check out, see if I can see them out there in Dry Creek area. Maybe I'll get to see a moose this close to town. Wasn't there. Next couple of days, as we were walking there again and again, I kept scanning Dry Creek, trying to see if I could see that moose. And the only thing I saw was those tracks getting more and more worn. No new tracks showed up. And a week later or so, I just kind of forgot to even look. And so it was on that beautiful June afternoon that we were heading toward the AC store along that track. And I decided to go up into the willows. Now, right past the cemetery, there's that large bank of willows there. And there's a labyrinth of trails that snake through those willows. It's four-wheeler trails. And we walked those off, and it kind of lengthened our walk, gave me the opportunity to give Jasper a little off-the-leash time, and I can get lost in my thoughts. Win-win. This particular day, we headed up into those willows, and the trail narrows there. If you've ever been up in there, you can reach side to side and touch the willows on either side. And they're tall. They're about over my head. The four-wheeler tracks get really deep there as well. It's well rutted, so much so that the ruts on either side of the midway part between the tires sometimes are mid-calf. And so it's easier to walk on top. So I was walking on top. Jasper's running ahead like he always does, running ahead, sniffing stuff, coming back. And I notice he stops as we head up the hill. I looked up, and about 20 feet from me was a wall of brown fur. And about the time it registered that that was the moose, I also saw a small wad of fur next to it. Oh, there's the little one. Now, moose are unpredictable. Really unpredictable. They can ignore you. They can run the other way. They can charge. They can trample. They can maim. And as I registered that this was a moose, Jasper, who was about 3 years old at the time and never had seen a moose, decided to go closer. Now, Jasper's this kind of dog that listens mostly. He will listen if he's not distracted by a squirrel or a bird or another dog or a human or a smell, or you get the picture. And the three things happened almost simultaneously as he halved the distance between me and this wall of fur was first, Jasper, no! Second, I am not going to outrun a moose downhill. And the third thing was reflexive. I stepped down into the tire well and rolled into the willows, scooching as far back as I could with my back against the trunks of those willows, just barely making it off the edge of the track. No sooner had I done that, but here comes Jasper loping down the trail. He wasn't running. He didn't bolt. But he was moving with purpose. Shortly after came the moose, loping down the trail, not charging, not running, seeming to let him know, you are not welcome here, you need to leave. And he obliged. Have you ever seen a moose from the knee down, this far from your face? I could have reached out and tripped her. She was enormous. Of course, I didn't. She ambled down, and I waited, and I waited. I didn't hear any barks. I didn't hear any yips. I didn't hear a huffing of any kind. And I waited. And I waited. And after what seemed like an eternity, but was probably about a minute, here comes Mama Moose ambling up the trail again, back toward her little one. I could have reached out and tripped her. Wisdom prevailed again, and I did not. I thought about it, but I didn't. Jasper didn't come up the trail behind her, so I waited, and I waited, and I waited. Another eternity, but it was probably about a minute. And I decided I needed to know if that moose was still at the top of the rise or not. And so I cautiously rolled out from under the bushes, peeked up the hill, couldn't see anything. So I stood up. She was gone. But Jasper was nowhere in sight. For all I knew, he had hightailed it back home. So I headed back down the narrow trail to the main trail. And there he was, about 50 yards away, standing there. I called to him. He didn't come. So I walked closer, called him again. He came, visibly shaken. By that time, the adrenaline had run through my body and my knees were knocking together. And I thought, at this point, we can do one of two things. We can hightail it home, or it's such a nice day. The moose was gone. And if we don't go back up that trail right now, we are not going to use that trail again for a very long time. And it's a good trail. Besides, I recognized that I had lost something out of my pocket that I really needed to go back and get. It was probably underneath the willows where I'd hidden. So we headed back up the trail. This time, however, Jasper stayed pretty close. And instead of being lost in my thoughts, I was talking loudly to myself, to Jasper, to anyone who would listen, scanning the tops of the willows to see if I could see a large head or anything else. We got back to the spot where I had ducked under the willows, and there it was, the remote control to the special collar that a friend of mine had loaned me for Jasper. Tucked it back in my pocket, headed up to the top of the rise. The moose were nowhere to be seen. So we kept walking. I was sharing the story with a friend of mine, and a couple weeks later, she texted and said, you know, there's a moose with two young across from the AC store. I got in my car and I drove over, and sure enough, there was a large moose and two calves. And I thought, I only saw one, but it's not to say there weren't two up that hill. And it got me thinking, if Jasper had not been focused on the moose and had seen where I had rolled and had followed me into the willows, and had that moose been a little more interested in chasing my dog, the story could have had a very different ending. As it was, we still use that trail. In fact, I was there this afternoon, and I still look for tracks. Only now it's more to be aware of what to avoid rather than what to find.
Patty Burchell. She shared that story at the October 2024 Tales Around the Wood Stove live event in Nome, Alaska. Our final story from that Nome live event is about a fundamental fear a lot of parents have, that they are accidentally doing things that will permanently scar their children. It's one thing to get yourself into a dangerous situation in Alaska, and quite another to do that when you bring your kids along. Fortunately for our next storyteller, the old adage that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger proved true for his son. Here's Ken Hughes.
So my story is about a boat trip that we took. So I used to live in Teller a while back, as many of you know. Teller, 73 miles northwest of Nome. My wife was gifted a boat and an estate at Mary's Igloo by her late uncle. And this boat was a nice little boat. It was a 16-foot keel, wooden, that he had built himself, a Pacific Dory design, a nice front end, so it handled the waves pretty nice. Came with a 20-horse Mercury, which we promptly blew up in short order, and so it needed a new motor. And so, me being the handy feller that I was, I found a couple of Evinrude 40s laying around that nobody else seemed to know what to do with, and so I put them together and put them on the back of the boat. And we decided, hey, it must be time for us to go up and check out the cabin at Mary's Igloo. So we figured, well, we'd make a week of it. So make sure we took it's a long ways. It's 60 miles by boat. So we loaded up 65 gallons of gas. My wife, my stepson, age 8, my oldest natural born, Frosty, he would have been 5. My daughter, Dora, about 3. And then my youngest boy, Gerald, would have been about 1 about then. And a couple of dogs, of course. And gas and grub for a week. Holy cow. There wasn't much room for anything else on the boat. So we took off. So what's the journey like? Well, the first body water is Grantley Harbor. It's about 10 miles heading up the east. Isn't too bad. Fairly protected. Then at the head of Grantley Harbor is Tuckshuck Channel. And Tuckshuck Channel is about 7 miles, 200 yards wide, cut through bedrock, and separates Grantley Harbor from a really nice big body of water, the head of which is where the Coosatreen River heads and which is where we were heading. But this body of water, the Great Salt Lake of Imurik Basin, it's 90 square miles, and it directly borders the Sawtooth Mountains. Them sawteeth tend to make that wind be a little bit meaner than nicer. And as the day goes on and the afternoon builds up, the waves pile up. Well, we were there kind of early, about 1 o'clock, so the wind wasn't too bad yet. But with that large a load, 17 miles, we head off. The waves don't look too awful. Well, it takes a while, and pretty soon, in order to keep water from getting in the boat, which I'm bailing out of the boat with a milk jug with the top cut out, with the handle still on, so that we can bail a gallon at a time, because it's still a wooden boat. Well, we get going, and pretty soon, you realize that the waves are making you got to get off a step and start going with the waves. But we're still going downwind. All of a sudden, my butt gets wet. It's a tiller, so I'm sitting there with the tiller, sitting on the back seat. All of a sudden, my butt gets wet because the waves are catching up to us. Oh, well, maybe we should turn around and get to the other shore. So I go to turn around and realize, oh, this is a boat, and we're going to be in the middle of some... Holy cow! You know, when I wasn't looking at those waves, they got really big, and now we're going up into the wind, and the water's coming into the boat, and I'm trying to bail, and I got the motor going about quarter throttle, trying to be a little gentle. Well, that doesn't work very well. Too much water is coming in the boat. So half throttle, still water coming in the boat, still bailing. At this point, the wife and the kids and the dogs are all huddling under the tarp in the front of the boat, which, of course, doesn't help when you hit a big wave. And the waves are about, 6 or 8 feet, which means, you know, they're 12 to 16 feet if you're in the middle. And I had to get that motor wide open. The way to get the least amount of water in the boat was to run the boat wide open into the waves. Well, every time you hit a wave, what happens? You slow down, and a wall of water goes by. You could stick my finger in the... Whoa, what's going on? I've got kids, family. We're about ready to capsize, and I'm worried about this wall of water here. Yeah, and it's salty too, and all I can think of is water all around and not a drop to drink. Yeah, the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, good luck. Well, out of all of this noise and ruckus, we got the motor running wide open, the wind is screaming, the boat's hitting the waves, and all of a sudden I hear a little voice from my precocious 5-year-old, "Shoot me, Daddy, shoot me! Shoot me!" He just could not stand what was going on there and just wanted to get put out of his misery now. He didn't want to drown. He was sure we were drowning. And I couldn't answer back. The wind's going the wrong way. He's never going to hear me. All I can do, and he's under the tarp, so he's not going to see me. All I can do is wonder what kind of damage I'm doing to my kids at this point. So, obviously I'm here, so the story had a good ending. We made it to the other shore and waited for a while. The wind died down. We went on with our trip and had a marvelous time at Mary's Igloo and made it safely home. So that was great. Frosty? Well, he's got a wilderness EMT certification now. He's floated the Yukon on a raft and helps his professors at UAA with leading orienteering courses and taking other kids out. So he said it's all a piece of cake after a couple of boat trips with Dad. Thank you.
Ken Hughes. He shared that story at the October 2024 Tales Around the Wood Stove live event in Nome, Alaska. Thanks so much for listening to Dark Winter Nights, True Stories from Alaska, our Live from Nome, Alaska episode, featuring stories from the Tales Around the Wood Stove event I hosted there last fall. If you'd like Dark Winter Nights to host a storytelling event in your community, whether you're in Alaska or not, feel free to shoot us a message on our website, darkwinternights.com, or email us at story@darkwinternights.com. Today's episode was edited by myself, Rob Prince. Story consultation by Lori Neufeld. Remember, these are the stories we tell up here in Alaska on Dark Winter Nights. I'm Rob Prince.